I want to ask you about Harper and Machado. I'm not surprised, frankly, that it's taken this long. I mean, Scott has played the market before, but which of the two do you think goes first?
It's a great question because I think each of them wants the other to go first so that the second guy can top the first guy.
Exactly.
And that's another example of the world we live in. Sorry, my dog is having issues right now, but I'm not sure what they are. But
Better go check. You can go check.
Yeah, no, she's right beside me. She's just barking at the invisible intruder right
okay.
now. So we always feel safe here.
But I
just think that each guy honestly wants the other guy to go first, because if guy number one gets $300 million, I think guy number two wants $300 million in one. And I think that's the world we live in. And I don't know about you, but I would much rather play for the team I want to play for in the market I want to play with a team that has a chance to win and make $1 less and play somewhere I don't want to play and make $1 more. But, you know, this may be what we're dealing with here. So the funny part is I think the Phillies have tried to get both guys, and obviously nobody really wants their money. I think the Phillies have to make a better offer than any other team to have a chance of getting either one of these guys. But I think if you gave both of them truth serum, Harper wants to be a Dodger and Machado wants to be a Yankee, but who knows if it'll work out that way.
Yeah, and I just, you know, for the sake of baseball peace, I'm hoping somebody makes a silly offer, because given the way this market has gone, given the way this free agent market has gone, given some of the things we're hearing now, some of the dissatisfaction in the player ranks, after Philadelphia's owner came out and said that they're going to spend silly money, if they don't spend silly money, then you know, people are going to put two and two together and come up with collusion.
And I think somebody, whether it's them or whether it's the White Sox or the Yankees or the Dodgers or whoever it is, I think you'd agree that Machado and Harper are a little bit exempt from the collusion allegations. And I don't think there's collusion, to be honest with you. I think it's analytics. And we could, you know, that's a whole other story for a whole other day. But you just don't give 32-year-olds six-year deals for $150 million anymore, because the funny part is, by the end of the deal, they're 38, and they're not as good as they used to be, so nobody's doing it anymore. But because Harper and Machado were both like 26 or whatever they are, I think they're a little bit exempt from it. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if the offers have kind of been in place for a while, and if the agents just keep going back to the teams they really want to go to and saying, is that really your best offer? Because he's got this from this team. He'd rather play for you, but he's got this from this team. And it's just, you know, it's a game of chicken right now. And I don't know about you, every time I see a tweet saying, you know, rumor has it, or a meeting here, not that I'm rolling my eyes, but I'm like, all right, let me know when it's over. When
yeah.
it's over, let me know, and I'll be very interested. But it's been weeks and weeks and weeks of this. And, of course, you know, the trickle-down effect impacts so many other free agents. But, you know, what's unusual here, too, is we've only got like three or four teams in play on these guys, because very few teams are in their tax bracket right now. Very few teams feel they can afford to go out and spend $30 million a year for 10 years or whatever it's going to turn out to be on one player.
I want to talk to you a little bit about, I mean, every time we've had you on so far this fall, and we'll probably continue through the spring, given the way the NCAA season's going. I mean, obviously we've talked about Duke. We've talked about, talking about RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson, who are huge stories right now. But I was thinking about this the other night, watching some of the highlights, one of their games. Dan, what is it about, I mean, this is a team full of just almost, I don't know if you could say they're transcendent talents. That would be going too far. But this is a team full of really, really good, really, really young players. What is it about Mike Krzyzewski that allows him to have success with players like this?
Well, I mean, obviously he's a great coach. He's a Hall of Fame coach. So, you know, and this is about his sixth or seventh year of doing this, you know. And by doing this, I mean getting a lot of the freshmen who are going to be one and done, you know, having a team that's loaded with freshmen. John Calipari at Kentucky was the first, but nobody else is doing it as much as Calipari is, other than Krzyzewski. So, I mean, he's a great recruiter. He's a great coach. Duke is an enormous brand. All you had to do was look at the Duke games in Canada to see how good the brand was. I don't know if you've ever been to Cameron Indoor Stadium.
I have not.
If you go in there, let's say you're a 17-year-old or 18-year-old high school senior who can play anywhere in the country, and you go down for your official visit at Duke, and they're playing North Carolina or Clemson or Florida State or Louisville or it doesn't matter who, and you get a taste of that atmosphere, I mean, holy cow. Like, it's tremendous. It's unbelievable. I've been fortunate to have been there more times than I can count. And it blows you away, the energy and the enthusiasm in that place every time. So when you can get great players, you're going to have great teams. And he's a great coach with great players. And you know, in the old days, so many teams are young right now that, you know, great 18-year-olds can beat good 19-year-olds. Now, whether they can beat good 21-year-olds is another story. But, you know, everybody's young right now. North Carolina's got three freshmen in their top eight, and Kansas is always young. And Kentucky, of course, is always young. So the sport is different than it used to be. You know, there are no Patrick Ewings and Tim Duncan staying 4 years and dominating the sport year after year after year like they used to, you know, back in the 80s and 90s. So I think what allows him to be successful, he's a great coach, he's got great players, and I think what he does really well, and this is hard today, is a lot of these guys are viewing college as just like a way station on the way to the NBA. Mm-hmm. But I think he, you know, the old cliche, you play for the name on the front of the jersey instead of the name on the back. I think Mike Krzyzewski does that as well as anybody can expect to do it in the current climate.
You know, I was wondering, hearing you talk about that, I was wondering if maybe the fact that so many of these guys are one and done's, if that in some ways doesn't make it, in some ways make it a little easier because, you know, one thing that happens when you've got really good players together for 3 or 4 years is, you know, in the perfect world, they develop chemistry, they love each other, everybody gets along, and, you know, things go swimmingly. Sometimes, though, egos get in the way, and I'm wondering if maybe when you know, I mean, if you're R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson, you know you're here for 1 year, you know that you're both going to be in the NBA, you know that you got to be impressive, you know, you basically know that you're going to help each other be really impressive, and at the end of the day, everybody's going to get theirs and everything's going to be good. But we only have to do it for a year. Does that help him a little bit? The fact that basically saying all these guys have just got to just get along for a year, you guys. You guys can go on your own after that.
Yeah, I think it could. I think it depends on the type of kid that you have, too, though. I think if you've got mature, intelligent kids, you can make them understand, hey, if you get 16-8 or if you get 23-11, the NBA guys are smart enough to see it. They're right. Smart enough to understand you're only playing 26 minutes a game, and I'm not necessarily talking about Duke anymore, but you're only playing 26 minutes a game because we're loaded. Yeah, you can go somewhere to a bad team and play 36 minutes a game and your numbers will go up, but the NBA guys can see through that. They don't look at the numbers per se. They look at you know, your skill, and they're smart enough to go to game after game, and you can watch any game on television. Like, stats are almost secondary now. It's about what you see with your own eyes. But I think in you know, RJ obviously is a mature kid, a worldly kid. His dad played. We all know his background very, very well. Zion Williamson's a different kind of a kid. You know, small town South Carolina kid, certainly didn't have the kind of background that RJ Barrett had. But all you have to do is look at him and like, what's he not getting to do that he would ever say, hey, I'd like to do this? Like, he's the showstopper right now. The one kid who I think is struggling, who, you know, it probably isn't talked about nearly as much in Canada, as Cam Reddish, who came in as the third ranked overall recruit in the country behind Barrett and Williamson, and Reddish hasn't found his role, hasn't found his shot. And now he's still showing up like 5, 6, 7 on NBA mock drafts, which is incredible because he's not having nearly the kind of year that he thought he would have. But I think it can be a struggle. And I think sometimes the good coaches too, they manage to keep that struggle internal. They don't let it, you know, come out in public. I remember a Kentucky team, I think it was 2015, I believe. They were so deep that John Calipari had the blue platoon and the white platoon. And he had two different five player units. And one group of five would start, and 4 minutes into the game, the next group of five would come in. And then at the 12-minute mark, the first group of five would come in. And that's the way they played every game unless they got into foul trouble. And somehow kids dealt with it, and they understood because he could look them in the eye and he could say, see this list of 37 players who have played for me who have been in the NBA? You're going to be on this list next year. And I think that's where Calipari and Krzyzewski have, you know, some cachet that not every coach in the college ranks has, obviously.
Obviously, there's going to be a lot of focus on R.J. Barrett, Dan, but is there another Canadian kid you're particularly intrigued by as we roll towards the tournament, a kid who's maybe moving up fast and draft rankings. They're just a kid who's a good story and is kind of blossoming.
There are a lot, like lots. And this might be the deepest Canadian group I think that we've ever had. And they're kind of coming out of nowhere these days. And so one is a freshman at Michigan, Iggy Brazdeikis, who I think could be a one and done. And if he's a one and done, I think he's a mid to late first round pick. Would be my guess. He is tough as nails. I think of Lithuanian background, tough as nails, swagger, cocky, can shoot, can drive, can dunk on you, and just plays with unbelievable tenacity and energy. He plays for Michigan, who's ranked second and undefeated in the country. He might be their best player. Lugans Dort, who I'm sure you've talked about, and I just like saying his name. And I haven't had an Arizona State game. He's a Montreal kid, so I didn't know nearly as much about him. And I haven't had Arizona State. I've seen him on TV. 6'4", 6'5", guard who looks like he looks more like a fullback. I mean, he's built, and he's a freshman too. 19 years of age. He can shoot threes, and he can dunk on you, and he can embarrass you when he dunks on you. And his defense is as good on the ball as any perimeter player that I've seen in the country. Brandon Clark for Gonzaga, probably their second best player. He lists his hometown as Phoenix. He was born in Vancouver, moved to Phoenix when he was a kid. You know how that works. We'll still take him. We'll claim him as
absolutely.
Our own.
We're not picking.
6'8 forward, uber athletic, great rebounder. Can go over the back of people and dunk on them, offensive rebounding. If he comes out, he's a junior, I believe. He was a transfer from San Jose State, stepped up to a bigger level with Gonzaga. If he comes out, I think he's a first-round pick. Mario Shayok is a kid from Ottawa. I'm sorry. Who played at Virginia for a number of years. Virginia's great, but they play a very slow style. He wanted to go somewhere where he could play more, put up bigger numbers, goes to Iowa State. He's leading the Big 12 in scoring. I think he gets a second-round look or at least like an NBA summer league invite. And there are others. Kyle Alexander at Tennessee is great. Lindell Wigginton at Iowa State. I absolutely love him. He's missed the first missed about the first 6-7 weeks of the season with a foot injury. He's back now. I think he's a pro. Like, they're all over the place. And there are many more that I could mention. But it's amazing to see. We talk about Wiggins and Bennett and now RJ. To me, the real story is how deep the talent pool is. And whereas instead of having a kid who got off the bench for 8 minutes a game at a mid-sized school, you now have the best player on the best team in a major conference being Canadian. It's just extraordinary.
One of the guys that that I think a lot of people sort of, and I had a couple of people on Twitter keep mentioning Andrew Nemhard's name to me.
Yeah.
RJ Barrett's running mate, I guess in high school would be the way to put it. What's up with him?
I like Andrew Nemhard a lot. Nemhard is a big guard. He's not like an uber quick, Iverson type. He's a 6'4", 6'5". Kind of guard. Remember Andre Miller, Utah, and played a long, long time in the NBA. Like, Nemhard's one of these guys, a little bit like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, although I think Shea has more talent. Nemhard's very good, but I think Shea is, like, ultra-talented. One of these guys who you kind of watch him, and he's just kind of got, like, a nice rhythm and flow about him. Doesn't blow by anybody, but he gets where he wants to get. Very unselfish, like a true pass-first point guard. I think he's very good. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's in his best interest to come out this year. I don't think he will come out this year. I think he's, a 3 or 4 year college player. But I think he's a guy, having seen him a lot, having done one of their games and talked to him for a while the day before the game, he's a cool cat. He knows what he is. He knows what he needs to work on. And I think he's got a lot of upside. I think he's the kind of guy who a year from now we could look at as being one of the best point guards in the country. And he's got a younger brother. I think his name is Ryan, I believe, who is a sophomore in high school and is down at Montford Academy in Orlando, the same place where Nemhard played and RJ played. And he's supposed to be very good as well. I haven't seen him at all. He's just 15 years old. But I like Andrew Nemhard. I think he's more of the longer play rather than the one and done. But I think he's got a lot of talent.
Very quickly, before I let you run, I'm intrigued by how the situation at UCLA is going to play out. I mean, that's a big coaching position. They beat Oregon 87-84 last night. They came back from a 9-point deficit in the final minute of the game and won it in overtime. Where does that job go? Because that should be one of the marquee jobs in the NCAA, shouldn't it, Danny?
It's funny. It should be, but I guess it depends on whether you look at, you know, what is it lately or what did it used to be? You know, when you talk about blue bloods, you talk about Carolina, Kentucky, Kansas, and UCLA still finds their way onto that list. But their facilities are not seen as good as the other big-time schools. A lot of people are making a big deal, and I think it's somewhat of a deal that the team doesn't charter as much as the other big teams, and maybe the budget for the coaches to go out and recruit isn't as big as some of the other teams. I haven't been to Pauley Pavilion in 2 or 3 years, but it's not like walking into Kansas or Duke or Indiana or places like that. You don't get that feel. You're not overwhelmed by the building or the history of the building, to be honest with you, even though they've won, you know, a gazillion NCAA championships. Yes, it should be a great, great job. And the state of California produces so many kids that if you get the right coach in there and he just keeps the good California kids at UCLA, they're going to be in Final Four. So I think it should be a great job, but I think there are some hurdles that they need to overcome and modernize a little bit and understand that if they want to compete with Kentucky and Kansas and Duke, they've got to do it on all levels.